Welcome to this episode of Super Yacht Laundry podcast. I am Charisse, your host, and I'm here with the beautiful Emma Deal. I was just saying how lovely her hair looked today. Hair wash day. Hair wash day. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's round number two, unfortunately. Technical issues. I reckon my listeners just get really bored of me talking about technical issues. One day, listeners, I will be able to afford a proper production facility where all the technical stuff is taken out of my hands, so it's just better.
It's fine. We get to have yet more coffee. It's perfect.
So I've wanted, obviously, to interview you because, obviously, we've known each other quite some time. And I'm a firm believer that crew don't understand what's being provided for them. And I think the only way we can work out how to fix things is work out where we're at. And the more I've gone into, especially female well-being on board, people just don't understand. And I don't know, and they just assume that the captain's going to do all right and is going to point me in the right direction. So hence why I wanted to speak to you about MedAir. So let's go back to what does MedAir do? Let's go right to the basic core of what it provides.
It's a good question. And we probably don't have time for me to go into detail on everything that we do. But essentially, we are the aviation and maritime division of International SOS. International SOS is the largest assistance provider globally. But most of the time in yachting, people will think of us as telemedicine providers, medical equipment and kits, and medical training.
So when you go and raid one of those medical bags for plasters because your feet hurt and stuff like that, or asking,
see you next week.
Asking the first officer, like, what kind of strong painkillers are in there that I can get hold of, you guys provide the kits. As well as loads of stuff that you won't be ever allowed to touch or go anywhere near. You'll be banned. So obviously that's what you do on kind of a fundamental level. So like to explain it, you're as close to an ambulance being on board without an ambulance being on board.
Yeah, essentially. So we're there to support the first responders. So provide them with the right equipment, make sure that they're trained so that they understand what they have available, make sure they know how to set it up, make sure they know how to use it effectively. And then we're supporting via the phone. So we've got our team of, the team of doctors and nurses that you've met out there are there to support those first responders through managing the illness or injury on board, and then also arranging that shoreside part as well. So we all know how much of a nightmare it is for yachties if they have to go shoreside. So our team are there to help do what we can on board, but also to acknowledge when something does require shoreside appointments, either for imaging, testing, etc., to then be able to arrange further treatment. So we take care of that as well.
So yeah, so you're an ambulance, not just for the crew, you're for guests as well.
Absolutely. So it's anybody that's on board.
Obviously the more important guests. They need to make sure that they're okay. But no, it's an all-encompassing service.
Absolutely. You know, we're there to support everybody that's on board. And, you know, in a lot of cases, the crew don't know who's coming on board, especially busy charter season. You're getting very limited information about who, you know, the state of somebody's health. So knowing that they can call us and we can support them through anything that happens is reassuring.
How many, obviously, because we're just coming to the end of a med season, how many calls do you get, would you say, in a, you know, a season?
Yeah, so it's around 200 a month cases. Now, every case could have any number of calls associated with it, emails back and forth, arranging provider appointments, etc. So it's very rarely a one call and done. But yes, during the busy season, we probably go a little higher. But yeah, 200 a month is about right.
But 200 problems, that's quite, I would have thought. One of those things, it's like the illusion that yachting is really dangerous and you're at sea and everything else. It's not deadly as catch, you know. It's kind of just cruising, nice environments. I think you know, it's a testament of how safe it is if it is only 200 a month. I know that kind of stuff. Would you say that's high or low?
Well, I think the team would probably think it's fairly busy. But I think the key really is it's not just emergencies. We're dealing with crew members that don't get to go home very often. And so a lot of those routine things that you or I would pop to our GP about, you don't always get that opportunity when you're out at sea. So something that maybe would normally not be an emergency
turns into
something that requires more immediate attention. So, you know, a lot of what we work with crews on is that sort of preventative part, making sure that they are going and getting the routine care whilst they're at home so that it doesn't turn into something that requires immediate medical attention and potential evacuation later down the line.
So where did, like, so obviously let's go back in time, because obviously we have to go back in time to really understand how it's changed. So obviously MedAir, when it started, was it mainly just kids in the beginning? Like, yes, how are you, can you give me the history?
Oh, goodness. Try and remember the dates now. So yeah, we founded in 1985. So we've been going 40 years this year.
There was no internet then.
There was no internet. It was all very different. I was very, very young then, obviously. So founded by a lady called Joan Sullivan, flight nurse, recognised the need for people who are remote on aircraft, and then later down the line yachts, needed not just the right equipment but also the support to be able to speak to somebody and do exactly what you would do in a hospital setting, get that second opinion, work out what the next best option is. So founded MedAir over in Phoenix, Arizona. Not a place that many yachties hang out, obviously. No.
Is there water there?
No, very, very deserty, lots of cacti. And then I guess really I joined MedAir in 2010, just after, so 2 years after International SOS had acquired MedAir, which was great. That suddenly meant that instead of just having one response centre, we could tap into the whole resources of International SOS. So we have
amazing
28 assistance centres globally now. So it really expanded the reach of the company overnight, which is absolutely fantastic for our clients.
And changed the service, obviously.
Completely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the level of service, one would say.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that first response part didn't change particularly. It's still the same people on the call, but definitely that shoreside capability. So the one thing that being part of International SOS allows us to do is tap into credentialed provider network. By that, what I mean is there's about 89,000 providers, be that dental clinics, hospitals, doctors, air ambulance providers,
wow,
security teams that our team go and vet and audit on a regular basis to make sure that they're delivering the service. Now, that's really key, because if we're recommending for somebody to go shoreside for an MRI scan, we want to make sure that they've got all the right equipment there.
Things can change over time.
And they really do. And you know, the one thing that I find really interesting now that I work here in the headquarters with the assistance team here in the same office as me, it takes a very long time for a provider to get up to our first choice level. It takes no time at all for them to be scaled right back down again. So, you know, things are evolving. We talked earlier about how the world's going crazy. That has not...
It
has an impact on absolutely everything. You know, all it takes is one hurricane to wipe out the healthcare system in one of these islands, and it goes from being incredible to non-existent overnight. So it's really, really important that we've got that data and we can make accurate recommendations for our clients.
So I suppose, but when it started, there was no internet. You know, maybe in all seriousness, like tapping into something, you know, let alone finding, because you know, back in the day, you're like, oh, where can I get my UNG1? And then there's this whole guy called Pierre in some marina somewhere. And you're like, here's a number. Like, what? You know, I am that old.
No, I mean, internet has absolutely revolutionized the way that we work with our clients. Obviously, it comes with challenges. You know, you can Google anything now and everywhere's got, every hospital has a beautiful picture of how spotless the interior of their operating theatre is, and you see iStock images at the bottom of it. So, you know, it's really important that you use the internet searches with caution. And that's why we have our team not just doing desktop studies, but going and visiting and making sure that, you know, we say it's got what it needs, it really does.
I think that's quite important, isn't it? It's a bit like your Instagram, you know. Do I look like that all the time? No. No, I don't.
Yeah, we do.
And when it comes to medical providers, you're saying, you know, does your surgery look like that all the time?
Yeah, it's a really, really tough one. And, you know, it's something we feel really strongly about. We certainly don't want to set the wrong expectation for somebody going in to receive shoreside care. So, you know, if you're looking to receive care in a little clinic on a remote island somewhere in the Caribbean, it may not be that great. You know, Papua New Guinea, we seem to have a lot of clients heading over that sort of direction at the moment. And you're like, we're going to get you out. You know, just because it's the first choice provider doesn't necessarily mean it's a good one. It's the best that's available.
That's, you know, it is something, and I don't think people think about it. You know, this is why, you know, it's very important to have conversations about with companies like yourself to get people to really understand what is provided, but why, and how even that can vary. You know, Galapagos Islands is not the same as the Thames. You know, you're not going to access the same amount of stuff on board, physically on board, sure. But when you're trying to, you know, get to that next level of care or assistance, it's completely different. And again, I don't know, it's the young people, you know, you're enjoying it. You know, oh my God, we're in the Galapagos, we've gone to Antarctica. Like, you know, all of these crazy things that boats, you know, they're even pushing the boundaries now.
And
they don't think
more,
about yeah. it. You know, don't think about it. If there is an incident and you're taking your 80-year-old principal guest to these random-ass places.
But our job isn't to stop them doing it. Like, we don't want to put a limit on people's adventurous spirit.
We want
like,
to give them...
You know, the whole point of yachting is to go further. It's to explore what's beyond the horizon. We're just doing what we can to get them back safely and help people to understand the risks and mitigate the risks that are possible. You know, if you've got an emergency response plan in place and you know, okay, realistically, this is going to take us 6 hours to get from point A to point B, which is the closest available clinic, you know to prepare. Okay, when something does happen, we know we've got at least 6 hours. Do we have enough oxygen on board to be able to, you know, have somebody on oxygen for 6 hours? Do we have the right amount of fluids? Have we got training to be able to sustain life for 6 hours? All of those things you can plan for if you've just done that bit of preparation ahead of time.
Do you think with how it's changed, you know, obviously with the induction, you can FaceTime with a, you know, a consultant and everything, all of those things. Does that put more pressure on the crew? Because you can do more in situ, which, you know, you're on great captain, great first officer, but they're not a doctor. But obviously then you're in that situation that you have to try. Do you know what I mean? Where, yeah. You know, in some situations, if you hadn't got a, you know, a surgeon on the line or whatever, you wouldn't be asked to even try. Do you know, is
that, really
has the educate
that? I mean, I think you're... If you or I were faced with somebody that required medical attention, you'd do what you can to try and support. So I think by having more and more tools to be able to support, you're only going to improve the experience for everybody and the potential for a better medical outcome.
But the training's developed as well. So you're teaching more when you're handing over these kits and going through the support.
Absolutely. And, you know, training forms the absolute backbone of everything. You know, there's no point in having all this equipment on board if you've got no clue what you're looking for and how to use it. So, you know, they always say that you don't sink, you sink to the level of your training and what you can remember. Rather than anything else. So it's really important that crew are trained regularly.
I was going to say, what is the regular, fire drills on board? You know, I worked on some great boats, but they probably weren't as regular as to encourage, it to be second nature. Yeah. I imagine with a medical kit, you'd want it as much as possible.
Yeah, and it's not mandatory in the same way that fire drills are. What I would love to see is every time you do your fire drills, et cetera, or your man overboard drills, extend that scenario. So instead of just bringing your man overboard on board and go, job done, let's have a nice debrief and a coffee, take it that next level, because that man overboard's probably not going to be in the best way. So, you know, doing that primary survey, understanding, okay, does this person need any more medical attention? Get the kit out, have a play with it. The more crew use the equipment in scenarios, the more comfortable they're going to be. And we really see that with, you know, the crews that call in regularly, those who are trained. A lot of them have medical professionals on board as well. They're running
the bigger
more
boats.
Yeah, absolutely. They're running more regular drills. And, you know, the ones that use us in the best ways are the ones that really prioritize practicing. You know, they're checking their telemedical devices with us every month to make sure that connection's working still. Because the last thing you want is, you know, to be under pressure and go, oh, it seems we've dropped off the internet because we changed the internet code last month, but we haven't updated our equipment. You know, it's really important that all of these things are drilled as regularly as possible.
I think it's a real good thing in general as well. You know, obviously, you know, there's always been talk in the industry of not boats that don't do drills and don't see the value in it. You know, obviously on our podcast, we talk about female issues all of the time. And I've always, you know, when it comes to training, especially the interior, there's not, you know, sometimes not a lot of, I've not got a lot of great things to say about some of the interior courses because they don't have light shelf life after you get off the boat. If you understand what I mean. Yeah. And I just think things like, you know, whatever, if you're doing drills that regularly, fire is obviously important, but with medical, that's useful when you leave the boat. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? When you've got a toddler that's literally trying to kill themselves every 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This is not, you know, crew should be super keen to do it because out of everything that you, especially the interior team, out of everything you'll get to do on there, that's really useful in life. You know what I mean? Because obviously, like I said, I talk about only really the female experience. Like, how do we get value out of that experience, those training things that we are put through? And I just think out of all of them, doing training, any kind of basic medical training, will just be valuable for life rather than... So, advice to anybody... whenever they do medic training, just volunteer.
Definitely. And I'd really personally love to see more interior crew putting themselves forward to be medical officers. So if you look at the way that the STCW system works, it's the medical, you know, it's the officers of the watch that are required to have their medical care on board, which kind of, I think, leaves a big gap. You know, if I was on board and I was, you know...
Sick, who would you speak to first if you were sick? You'd be like, stewardess, can I... Do you know what
absolutely,
I mean?
Absolutely, you know, in terms of compassion, you know, generally I'm going to probably want to speak to another woman, especially if it's, you know, if I look at the cases that we have, it's UTIs, STIs, you know. It's things that you don't necessarily want to be flagging up to the captain in your first conversation. So I think, you know, I'd love to see more purses, more chief stewardesses, pushing themselves forward and gaining that sort of medical care on board qualification so that they can be the on board medical officer and they can be that point of, you know, first point of contact.
I think that's a really good point. You know, obviously if you look at healthcare on land, you know, there's a reason why majority of nurses are female, yeah. You know, bedside manner. I'm not saying it's not possible for a man to, you know, you can have a penis and be a nurse, but like, it is that bedside nature. Do you know what I mean? That care, you know, it's part of, you know, our makeup. But again, goes back to seeing the value of the interior. You know, they can be trained more in more probably useful stuff.
For sure.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if there is an accident on board, captain's probably, you know, the boat's crashed, whatever, he's dealing with that. And the first officer will be sure, because they need to get make sure the boat's secure. But then you've also got injuries.
Yeah.
So you're overloading.
It's all the same people that are required to do
the same
everything.
Stuff all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's sharing the load. And also that makes, you know, a more cohesive team, you know. Definitely. Otherwise, you know, when you're watching war movies, the medic would be the captain or sergeant or whatever. And that's never the case. It's never the medical officer is, you know, sergeant, whatever. There's a separate medical officer because it's a separate thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, our chief officers and captains are so overloaded with everything else that they have to do. You know, to your point, if they're having to reposition the boat and work out where they're going to get it and
or move it so they can get pick up casualties and all of that kind of stuff.
So, I'd love to see that change and shift in culture. That would be fantastic. And particularly on the female health side of things, like, I wonder how many cases would come through to us earlier where there are more options to treat before they become
really sick.
Something where they actually need to be disembarked and potentially, you know, evacuated.
Yeah. Out.
And we have had UTIs cases where we've had to evacuate.
Yeah, but it's one of those weird ones. I mean, you know, not to bore everybody with the UTI. It has, you know, people on land don't realise sometimes that they've got one. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those slow building things. And in our environment on board, you might have like a twinge in your back and you're like, right, I'm just going to take some paracetamol or take some cocoa. And you'll just get through that trip and deal with it later. Obviously, you know, it doesn't surprise me that the only way you end up getting treated is because you've literally collapsed.
Yeah, and we'd
it's
love...
the nature of the job, you know.
And we'd really love to make that shift as well. Like, we've always said, call early, call often. That is, like, our mantra has been since 1985, hasn't changed. Because the earlier you call and you seek medical advice, the more options you've got available to you, and the earlier we can make any kind of intervention and hopefully avoid it becoming a more serious case. But to your point, if you don't call in and speak to somebody at that first back twinge and go, yeah, I've had this, and don't have the opportunity for them to ask you some other probing questions to just rule out what it might be, you're not going to know until you start really developing further symptoms, at which point it's already progressed.
And it's more serious.
Yeah.
Well, you could have made it even more serious
exactly.
than it needed to be.
Exactly.
I mean, I think, to be honest, obviously we've spoke about these things. It's like a combination of a lot of things. It's the nature of the job. You know, it unfortunately is just one of those where you'll just pop a few pills and then just get to it a bit later.
And you're on your feet, you're potentially dehydrated because you've walked past the water tap many, many times. But did you have time to stop and grab yourself a drink? No. So it's, you know, we get it. And, it, you know, we definitely try and work on promoting education. But ultimately, it's just that self-awareness as well. Like, actually, I don't feel quite how I'd like to feel right now. I'd like to just make a call. And actually, with that in mind, we're just about to launch a new app so that crew can have an app on their phone and be able to call us over internet anytime
Oh, so that's like you get the app when you get on the boat and they give it to you.
Yeah. Exactly. So up until now, and again, this may be another reason that, you know, we only tend to get calls from the medics or the medical officers. It's generally, you know, sat phone or cell phone usage. So now having the ability to have internet calling, all still fully integrated into our case management system.
I can't wait to hear the stats on that. You've opened up Pandora, you're like, right, you can call us for anything.
Well, and to be honest, you know, that has been one of the considerations is like, you know, how are we going to know if this is even, you know, somebody who's a client? But actually, our ethos is we want to help. So let's open it up. Wow. Let's make it easy, as possible for people to call.
I can't wait to see the stats. Yeah. You'll have to do stats. I do love a stat. I've told Olivia, I love stats.
But no, we also want
that's changing the nature, you know, like, you know, obviously back when you guys started in 1985, you had to go through the chain. Like, I suppose it's one of those things, you have to go through the chain of command. The chain of command is there for a reason. But when you're talking about health things, I don't think it helps things. Do you know what I mean?
No, and we know from a mental health perspective, one of the biggest barriers to calling is having to get authorization from somebody or can I use the SAT phone? It's not something that anybody, it's not a conversation anyone wants to have if they're already at the point where they're considering calling in for some emotional support. So removing those barriers, really, really important.
You brought up that word.
Your favourite.
Mental health. You brought up mental health. Oh, I don't know. Am I tired of talking? I'm not tired of talking about it, actually. Because there is a lot going on in the world of mental health. Some of it I agree with. Some of it, not so sure. But one of the reasons, obviously it was a few years ago now, that I got you guys to come to Onteeb. We did a panel discussion because I'd had a previous conversation with you. We were talking about mental health and you were like, we've provided it for like 10 years. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Our best kept secret.
Best kept secret. No, because it was a very interesting book because you enlightened me that it was something that's always been part of your service to be provided. So mental health support whilst people are on board. But when I was speaking to you about it, you were like, nobody was interested.
No, and genuinely, when we, so the ability to speak to our doctors and nurses about and gain some mental health support in the moment has always been part of the service since day dot. And then 10 years ago, we launched sort of an extension to the service to add on some counselling support. So 5 sessions per crew member per instant per year. No authorization required from the captain. They just call in, speak to us, and we'll refer them on to trained counselling support. So same therapist each time. So we launched that, and it was about 10 years ago. And I remember sitting there with the team going, well, what are we going to call this? And everyone was like, you can't talk about mental health. So much stigma. You can't, you know, we can't call it anything to do with mental health. So goodness, what should we call it? So we settled on emotional support add-on. And now I don't think that really resonates.
No. No, it's not resonating with me right now.
100%. And I think this is maybe why it's one of our best kept secrets. Because we stood so far away from mental health because nobody wants to talk about mental health in, you know, 2014 or 2015. If you've got some good ideas. Open to suggestions.
Honestly, this was one. So, when was on Teeb? 3 years ago?
Yeah, at least actually.
Three years ago. You know, and that I wanted to get. So, I did the panel discussion because I'm like, nobody knows. Nobody knows what all of you guys do in your entirety. And then, when an incident happened, who does what? When does play in? We can also get political that not all of you agree on some of the courses of actions, which is right. But that's a whole different conversation. But I'm like, it's still there, you know. And obviously, one of the things we just highlighted, you know, we were talking before we got started to record. You know, there's a lot going on in the industry, and lots of people are wanting to start companies and initiatives and everything else.
But which it's is great. All, it all adds it to all, the
It's all lifting the profile of it. But then obviously you guys put your hand up and go, we already do this. We already provide it. It's in your list of shit you can do. You know, like,
yeah, and I do think there's a challenge on board, even when, you know, we've had the conversation with the captain or the chief officer. Generally the medical officer is the sort of key stakeholder on board for us, and they're aligned with it, they're keen to go ahead. It's amazing when we get on board and we speak to some of the other crew members, like, do you know how to access mental health support through MEDAIR? They go, can we do that? So there's, and you know, it's challenging. You've got crew turnover. People don't always read exactly what's on the handover notes, and or maybe those handover notes aren't as concise as they need to be able to explain how to access and what you can access. So, you know, that's something that we've really recognised over the last year, and have been doing a lot of onboarding and re-onboarding and re-educating crews with this emotional support add-on to make sure that they realise, like, you don't have to ask the captain. This is pre-approved.
I think, like, in a boat's defence, you could have a season where, you know, you go through crew.
Yeah.
You know, totally. People leave and everything else. So, you know, it can get not lost, but it can go down the pecking order of stuff that needs to be done in that year. But that's why, you know, going back to what we were talking about with regular training, you know, you'll reiterate what's available when you're doing, you know, your fire training, you do some medical training, you're like, oh, look, these are the providers.
Yeah, these are your tools.
These are the things you can do.
Definitely.
For either crew or guests. Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of re-educating, you know.
And it, as you said, there's crew turnover. So it's really hard. You know, you'll look at your list of clients that you need to do an onboarding session with. You're like, great, I did a, you know, quick re-education on mental health 3 months ago. Well, 3 months later, they could be 5 or 6 new crew members, depending on the size of the boat. And, you know, so it is constant. So just making sure that they've all got access. And that's one of the reasons for this app is, you know, if they've got it there, it's on their phone, they can see, you know, big button, are you in need of any, you know, would you like to speak to somebody about mental health?
And get them notifications. Do you know? This is what you need to do, the annoying notifications. Do you know you don't need to talk to a captain?
You haven't called us.
Right.
Did you know you can? So we're really excited about some of the enhancements that we're bringing to try and just make sure that crew know and can more easily contact us.
Like I said, you know, in the reticence, you're a company that provides stuff, and, you know, it shows how far things have gone, whereas you thought about how to name it because of the stigma behind mental health.
Totally.
To where we are now is like, you're probably going to, you know, send notifications on an app saying, are you all right? Do you need anything?
Yeah. and that's great. And I think, you know, we can all have much more open conversations now. 10 years ago, it was, you know, you'd speak to captains on board and a lot of times they'd just say, oh no, we're one big happy family. We don't need any emotional support here. And it was a little tongue in cheek, but at the same time, it was quite frustrating.
Yep.
Because we probably do need to address it, because I'm not sure what training you've got as a captain that qualifies you to be able to be a mental health first aider as well and signpost people into the right places.
So it's a bit tricky as a provider as well, because you don't, you know, obviously it has to be authorised by the captains and the owners and stuff like that. And you can't go, well, you're rubbish, you need this.
Yes, your whole crew really need it.
With the greatest of respect, you are not a mental health provider, captain.
And I think that's how to
approach it with them.
And, you know, much as you bring in specialists to do all sorts of things on board, you know, they wouldn't think twice about, well, some might think twice about operating on somebody, see, but, you know, they bring us in for the medical expertise. I'd just love to see a little bit more on the mental health side.
Is it like I said, I was like, when you said, we did it for ages, I'm like, what?
Are you sure?
Are you feeling my leg? No, it's quite mad. that it's been there, but, you know, that literal, you know, stigma that's even prevented you talking about that it exists, you know, it shows how far things have changed.
Definitely.
I mean, it's been turbocharged, like, since starting Yacht Pals of Wisdom, like, that was 2021. It's turbocharged at the moment, to the point where I think we're going to end up getting into mental health fatigue. Like, nobody wants to talk about their feelings anymore. I'm done. Can we just
all the more reason to have a counselling service?
Like, I don't want to talk about my feelings. Just let me go to Drinkers Club. We'll be going back there. You know, French Water can sort it out.
But also, I think, you know, you mentioned earlier, lots of other providers as well. And I think it can be a little bit confusing knowing where one service starts and another service stops. And I think, you know, one thing that, you know, working with iSwan, we've had lots of chats with MHG Insurance and other insurers as well, just to help with some jargon busting. So there'll be some nice joint pieces of communication coming out into the industry as well that just help to myth bust a little bit, you know.
Yep.
Yacht crew help, incredibly important. You know, there are so many crew out there that do not have the support of an employer. They do not have any kind of wellness or assistance programs.
They might not have you.
Like, you know, well, exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly.
There are boats out there that run with not a lot.
Yeah. Mm. And, you know, that's maybe where, you know, I've said it many times, as a yachting community, we're maybe still a little behind. We're catching up. But if you look at other organisations that, as International SOS, we look after, it's really standard to have an employee assistance program in place. It's not, this isn't groundbreaking. You know, we're very chatty about it in yachting at the moment, but this is not new. You know, you just have to look outside of yachting to see that pretty much every other industry, you know, companies are expected to provide wellness and mental health support to their employees, financial assist, you know, guidance and advice. All of that is
normal.
Is normal on land. And I think that's where we just want to try and go, okay, well, what can we learn? And in the same ways that from a medical perspective, we also learn from other industries, you know, I think that's something that we can really bring to yachting.
What do you think, you know, you foresee will be the next developments, you know, in the next, like, the coming years? What do you think, you know, obviously you're developing your own services. What can you see that, I think, you, well, just them becoming more professional at sea, maybe?
I'd love to see that. I mean, I can only really speak to sort of what we're looking at and where we think sort of medically and also from a mental health perspective. I think AI is going to absolutely revolutionise how we do things.
Really?
We'd love to see, you know, AI robots on board.
Robots.
being able to, you know, because one of the challenges is, you know, if you've got minimal training, trying to actually get the right data to be able to send to a team. So, you know, we've got lots of great solutions to be able to take vital signs data and transmit that. We've had that technology for many years, but actually, you know, the next generation's coming out now, and it's brilliant.
Does that mean, like, so live time your vitals are coming through to somebody who's thousands of miles away?
We have that capability today, but it just requires a reasonable amount of training. So pre-hospital monitoring units like Core Pulse, absolutely fantastic, and where we've got medical professionals on board boats, like, that's brilliant. And that's streaming all of your vitals, your SpO2, it's your blood pressure, your respiration rate, and ECG readings as well. And that can be so helpful in diagnosing. I see AI coming into that and helping with some of the more, you know, more diagnosis, but also the ability for them to just be able to, you know, pop vital signs monitors on and with minimal training get that information.
You might end up having, like, robots on board, and it's actually a surgeon that's like doing it, like a games console.
Can you imagine,
like, you're like, he's actually doing it through VAR, no, yeah. not VR, kind of goggles.
VR goggles. Everyone's going to be wearing goggles.
But
you imagine, one of the biggest barriers to getting, we have to send people ashore to get scans and having an ultrasound, for example. It would be great if we had an ability for somebody on board to be able to take that ultrasound. Now, at the moment, I'll be honest, if we get a reading, it just looks a bit of a mess because the person taking it hasn't necessarily been trained to position it in the right place to get the readings that we need. So if you can have some kind of technology that's going to... So, yeah, technology is going to really...
Sci-fi.
..change the ability for people to do more and more on board. And not, I'm not saying surgery. There is a time and a place where you should really get that person off the boat. But a lot of the testing, we've got an aging owner population who do require regular tests to rule out or confirm diagnosis. Going shoreside isn't always convenient. And it certainly isn't pleasant in the majority of cases. So the ability for us to test more and more on board to then be able to make...
That's probably on the horizon.
I think so, yeah, for sure. Wow. We've already seen it with the type of equipment that we're being able to place on board in the last 5 years. And I see that continuing.
And also they're not as big anymore. Like, you remember, obviously they talk about these big boats and they've got a whole medical bay. Mm. There's huge pieces of equipment. Things have changed so much. Obviously, prime example of our evolution is the mobile phone. We were, back in the day, all of those things that are on that were separate devices.
Yes.
So it's only logic that the medical bay on a boat might not need to be as big, because you'll just probably have a couple of bits of kit that can do a lot of different things.
Yeah, definitely. I think also it's the accessibility, so making it easier and easier for crew to use. So bringing that technology to non-medical professionals and empowering them, I think, is really, really strong.
Sounds exciting. But going back to what we said, who's going to be trained in this stuff? Although obviously the technology is going to kind of meet you in the middle, I do think there might be a space, medical officers, like we said, being the interior team. I think they've got the time and the capabilities. And that's worth more.
And more junior crew members as well. It's so, so important that we retrain and re-educate those more junior team members. Because you can train somebody to be delivering oxygen through a bag valve mask. It takes no time at all to do that one bit of training. And if you've got somebody that's doing that really, really well, they can be the least medically trained person on the boat, but they are doing a really, really important job in that moment. So I think the more we can empower junior crew members to do role, to take on roles and, think of it as a pit crew, everyone's got their role.
Exactly. There's not one person doing all of it.
No, of course not.
And I think
I'll be honest, we've got a lot of clients with a medical professional on board, which is absolutely fantastic. But it can be extremely daunting if you're a nurse that's come out of a clinical setting where you've always had, at least one or two other people working with you. You've always got that doctor overseeing what you're doing and prescribing medications. There's quite a big disconnect when you get on board and it's like, oh, well, great, you're the medical professional. This is what, we need you to do everything. And suddenly you're being asked to do things that are quite outside of your scope of
training,
which is quite worrying in some cases.
New development.
Definitely. So, I'd love to see, it's one of the things that we try and do as a company, is really support those onboard medical professionals to feel like they've got us in the background. They can call our doctors and get that extra opinion. They don't have to try and do everything themselves.
So it's such a typical yachty thing. You're a medical trained professional. And they're like, what else can you do? Do you know what I mean? A single role gets expanded beyond someone's capabilities.
Well, and also they're normally, a deck nurse or stew nurse as well.
Yeah,
so, they're 90% doing onboard jobs, and then, you know, as soon as there's something medical, oh great, excellent, we've got a medical professional, off you go. So I think I feel like there's a lot of pressure on the onboard professionals that we have currently.
It's all changing. You know, we're going to do another episode.
We will.
With another lovely lady, and we're going to talk about specific issues for females on board.
Yeah.
Things will change by the time we get there. Everything's changing so fast. Like, it's really, really rapid, but it's quite an exciting, mostly positive time, I'd say. A lot of the developments are very positive at the moment. I think there's just, yeah, there's a bit of a change in mood with the industry. But it's been going on a while, like where or how a lot of these things can be done, or what we need to surmount to get them done, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think, there's a lot of great, great work going on in the industry at the moment. I think it's a really positive time for people to be kind of coming together with good ideas. And I think now it's just a case of, okay, less talk, more action.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, we finished the first episode. Part two, we're gonna do another time. But no, like I said, since our conversation, I don't know, it would be God knows how many years ago now, about it, education is key. And yes. I still, even though we had that conversation a long time ago, crew aren't there yet. They don't actually, most of the time, understand what the boat provides or is legally required to provide, and what is their responsibility and what are other entities' responsibility. And I think that's where we're at now, is kind of just the education. And you just need to rename your emotional support. It's just not cutting.
It's not cutting it anymore.
It's not cutting it anymore. Slightly rebrand. A rebrand. I love a rebrand. Rebrand, refresh.
Yeah. Well, I'll send you over the ideas later. Get your feedback.
Emma, thank you so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure.
I will get
thank
you on
for
again.
Having me.
We're gonna episode number 2 is probably gonna be a bit more, I don't know, personal.
A bit more medical focus.
A bit more gooey and messy, and just the joy of being a woman, I'm sure. So yes, thank you for this one.
Thank you.
Until the next time, dear listeners, obviously make sure you get the right emotional support out there. No, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. And we will be following this up with the glorious, lovely Emma at Meda for episode 2. But until that time, go check out some other episodes, and we'll be back soon.